Episode 23 of The Exit Strategy. We have our guest, Phil Schneider, COO of Apellix, a drone technology company that makes it safer and faster to clean elevated structures across the world. Now let's hear the count.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You're listening to The Exit Strategy, a podcast that inspires open discussions about financial news and technology today. My name, Marcus Megarian, a recovering SaaS vendor, joined by my co-hosts, Ralph DeFiore and Swadek Mazumdar. And we're sitting down with startup founders, technology experts. Now let's begin.
So that means that everyone from Philadelphia feels invincible as well, kind of thing, or?
You know, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, growing up, it was Friday in school, you had to watch Rocky every single Friday.
That's right. But, you know, we love having you on the show. The fact that, you're a tech guy in the hardware space where you make things fly, you protect the world. You're kind of like the Superman in the robotics field. But Phil, thank you for joining us on the podcast. We'd love to learn more about Apellix and what you do.
Absolutely. I mean, you hinted at it with the drone part there. Take pictures, weddings, do stuff like that. And they think of these camera drones that are out there. When we started Apellix, the idea was different. It's like, you know what? We can teach these things to do real work. And the idea came from Bob Dahlstrom. He was painting. And he was like painting his beach house. And he'd been a painter when he was in college. And quickly realized he wasn't in college anymore. And was like, there has to be a better way. And he started thinking about drones. And that's basically where the concept came from.
But your drones are more than just drones, right? I mean, you're not just taking pictures. I mean, you're doing things that are actually helping with cost cutting. And, you know, we could put these drones in dangerous situations.
Well, the idea really is to try and replace people. There are a lot of these dangerous, dirty, and dull jobs out there. And things that people have to do. And working at heights it's actually really challenging. And in a lot of industrial projects, they estimate that about 60% of the cost comes from getting access to the height, to where you have to be and what you have to do. And so if we're able to replace all these lifts and scaffolding with drones and just have the drone go up and do it, there is a tremendous cost savings to that. But you're also able to do certain things faster, better than people can do. And that's really where we're playing and trying, and doing this. Now, we have three products that we're working on. We have a platform where we basically have created, it takes a lot of power to do this. We have a ground power part. We have a precision navigation thing, because part of what we're doing is really trying to bring drones very, very close to structures, or in some cases, touching them. And that's the opposite of what, if you think of your regular drone, it has obstacle avoidance. It doesn't want to get near anything, right? That's the whole idea. And what we're doing is saying, no, we want you to touch this, or we want you to spray paint this. And so we had to completely re-engineer the drone in order to do that. And so the products we have are one that does power washing. That's sort of our brute force. The first product that's coming to market. We have a spray painting drone, which that one's probably the most complicated. And then we have a drone that does what's called ultrasonic and dry film testing. It can touch an object like a storage tank, tell you how thick the paint is, how much corrosion is there on the metal.
That's awesome. Phil, when you started off in this, so you're the COO of Apellix, I gather, right?
That's correct, yes.
So when you started off, which was about, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so from then to now, tell me the evolution. What have you seen? Tell me what the commercial applications have been or are evolving into.
Okay, a lot of what we've seen, if you look at what's happening with robotics, there's really a big move to automate a lot of things, and it addresses a lot of problems you see in industry. So part of when we're sitting here talking about what we're doing, some of it is, we can save you some money, we can save you some time. But the other part has to do with finding people to do the work. I think by 2025, they're estimating a shortage of 100,000 painters, okay? We have the infrastructure bill, which has been passed, and some of that's going to require even more work. And then the other thing they throw in there is, I think it's something 80% of the workforce that's doing the painting now is like 55 or older, and these guys are going to be retiring. So there's this real shortage of workers. So when we're like, hey, you know, we're creating this drone that paints, industry is incredibly supportive of this. And so we've worked with some of the large players there as we're getting the technology ready.
So when you have these painting drones, how are you carrying the paint? Does it come through a hose, or is there, you know, a tank? So it has to be heavy, right? How does that work?
So this is a great question. So this was part of when Bob was thinking about it. The first thing was, well, if we have to carry the, you know, this won't work. If we have to carry the paint, it's too heavy. You'll have to constantly be landing to fill it. So what we have, and this is part of our platform, is we have tether technology. We have a tether for power because these need a lot of power. You don't want to be changing batteries every 20 minutes. And the other part is the tether for either the water and power wash or the paint in the spray painting drone. And that just goes right down to the ground. And you're like, it can be huge amounts of paint there. Now, there still is a limitation. The FAA regulation states that you're not allowed to, you know, you need a special exemption to fly something that's over 55 pounds. So the weight of the drone, the hose, and the fluid in the hose has to be under 55 pounds. And so we count that. We can go up and do things at, you know, 100, 160 feet, depending on what type of hose, what type of liquid we're spraying there.
No, that's excellent. And I guess Ralph, you have what IPs do you think around that, right?
No, I wanted to ask Phil a question. I looked at the video, and I assume this runs by electricity, right? Because there's a wire going up to it. Yeah.
Correct.
What about draping the hose from the roof so that the drone doesn't have to carry all that weight?
You got it. And that's actually one of the ways that we've done some higher type jobs. So we'll go up and, you know, do a part, and then we can do the other part where we come off the roof and be going down on that. It's a little more complicated to fly it that way, but that's exactly how you do some of these things. And there are ways you can also support the hose and certain things to get extra height out of it. So there's strategies to get around that. But yeah, you hit it there. Now, one thing people don't think about, and the reason that the spray painting part's so hard, is that when you're using the drone to paint something, okay, you have to be obviously a certain distance away. If you get too close, the paint runs. If you're too far away, it disperses too much. So you have to maintain like a really accurate distance. And then you have to be moving at a certain speed so that you lay down the exact amount of paint you're supposed to. So this for us was one of the more difficult. It's why this one's the hardest. And we have a prototype, but we're not quite in our on the spray painting drone. We're not doing field trials yet. We still have some things we need to finish up there.
What about scraping? If you have to scrape the building before you paint it, or scrape the structure before you, do you do?
There. It depends on the industry, and you know. We have our power wash drone can spray up to, you know, we take 3000 PSI at the pump. So we can do what we call, we can do the prep, okay, for light prep. But there's certain things where, you know, on some of these storage tanks, so the above ground storage tanks for oil, gas, things like that, they actually remove the full coating from them, and they either need to blast them or scrape them. And there are other robots that can crawl and do those things. And then, you know, we see ourselves as coming in later and doing the painting on that.
Right. In terms of cost, what's the differential between, you know, you're doing a building and somebody else doing a building by hand?
It's significant. I mean, obviously we're not totally done yet, but the initial tests we did when we were looking at it, we paint about 20 times faster than a person. Okay. So there's considerable savings there. And then the other part comes from the access. Do you need scaffolding? Do you need these lifts and stuff? So
yeah,
it was significant in the amount of savings.
Phil, you mentioned the fact that you couldn't be too far away. You can't be too close. Now, do you have software and instrumentation to do that, to keep it close enough to paint, but not too close?
So what we had to do is, again, a lot of the stuff we found with drones and the way they worked, we had to really do some engineering to make it work for this task. Because as you get really close to a structure, especially if that structure is a metal storage tank or something, you lose GPS. It often gets blocked, right? And that's what drones tend to use for navigation. And then they have a magnetometer so that, this way is north. And again, the metal structure will be like, here's north. And even when you're flying very close, the barometric pressure can go off and it can't tell high and low. So what we did is we work with a laser guidance system and we have something set up, a laser. And when we get close, that takes over for all the other navigation. So we'll fly manually up to the structure and then we'll activate our laser guidance system. And then that's what controls the drone and makes it so that it maintains the speed and the distance.
And what about the propellers? Are they interfering with the paint, blowing the paint around?
These are great questions. This is when we initially did the prototypes, this was one of our concerns. When you start out doing something that people have never done before, so you have some things that you know and you worry about. This was one of the ones we really worried about. And in the end, the effect from the propellers really isn't that much on the paint. It's not there. There's a very small radius where you get that effect from what's happening there. And we have a wand on the front where the paint comes out of. So no, that doesn't affect it at all. But yeah, we were really worried about that. And so that was one of the things in early prototypes where it was like, well, is this going to work? The thing we didn't think about when we were initially starting was the fact that, we'd lose GPS and the magnetometer and barometer, that none of the navigational stuff would work. So that was like the unpleasant surprise when we went from working on our test wall in the backyard going, oh, this is working pretty well here at the warehouse. And then you take it out in the field and you try doing something. It's like, oh my God, this doesn't work at all. So those are the things I think that when you start something new, it's like, holy crap, man, never thought about that one. And you step into it and it's like, okay, how do we solve this? Because that's constantly what you need to do. How do you solve this problem?
Bill, I hate to drone on with questions, no pun intended. But the insurance savings from having people high up, that's got to be a considerable cost benefit to your
it
system.
The whole workers' comp, all the things. It's Bob Dahlstrom, who is the one who had the idea and the one who started this whole journey with Appellix. He basically, that was a big thing for him, the whole safety factor. And at one point we were always saying, we're a safety company. But then it was sort of like, yeah, but a safety company could be making safety vests. We better, talk about, we're a drone company or a robotics company. But it's a huge factor in what we do, because it's not just that, okay, we can get these things without it, but the accidents that do happen at heights, they're not little things. They can be fatal and they're very serious. So the more we're able to remove workers from harm's way, the better. I think the other side, even when you talk about the workforce part of it, the trouble with getting people to do these jobs is, yes, they are dangerous and they're difficult. Piloting the drone is just, it's a hell of a lot more fun than it is to be up there in a lift spraying this thing, where you're just controlling a drone, activate the automated pilot thing. And then you're basically monitoring the drone doing its work and, there for safety reasons. But very, very different type of job from being out there spraying the stuff and, up at heights.
So the person controlling the drone, Phil, is there any argument like the investment bankers not wanting to go into JP Morgan? They want to do it remotely. Do you have people doing it remotely or right there?
No, you for this one, you have to be there. There are rules about like flying drones beyond the visual line of sight. And even in these, you know, in these things, you know, a lot of where we're thinking about the uses and a lot of our initial projects are more industrial in nature. We're not really thinking about, you know, painting someone's two-story house. It's more we're looking at bigger industrial structures. The safety protocols around those are pretty intense. So we would always have a pilot and an observer. And, you know, you're sort of doing these things. The observer would also be doing things like making sure the paint thing, you know, paint bucket is still, you know, staying filled with paint, dealing with tether management at times, stuff like that. But no, it's definitely not the remote job. We've had, what's fun is, as you're doing this, people come, because the way we look at it, we created a platform. You know, it was like, originally we were thinking about painting, but there's so many other things that can be done. And even some of the patents that we have talk about things like, you know, adding attachments to try and scrape off rust or things like this. So drilling, stuff like that. There are different things that we've put in the patents. I think there'll be more to come, you know, as you start getting better with these tools, as our platform matures and we'll be looking at other stuff. But people come to us and there's some pretty interesting things. We're doing a, you know, working with the Department of Defense on something for decontamination of military vehicles in, you know, basically in battle. And the idea is they don't like the idea of having guys in hazmat suits up on ladders scrubbing off these trucks because they're a target for the enemy. And, you know, and it takes a long time to do. And then when you're done, you have to decon the decon guys, right? And so the whole thing is, it's a lot of people, it's putting people in harm's way, and it's time consuming. And so we've been doing some work with them where we're able to do it faster. And, you know, part of the requirement, and that's where I'm going, it was, well, can the pilot be pretty far away? And the answer is, why? And it's like, because we don't want them to get blown up. And it's like,
relatively remote.
Yeah. You know, so yes, we can actually, you know, have them further away. We have cameras on these things, but it's definitely easier. And I think in a real work environment, you're sort of close to the thing. You're not sitting at home like with an Xbox.
Phil, listening to you, it seems like, you know, when you talk about just drone technology, it seems like, oh my God, so simple, right? Flying drones and doing painting, this, that, the other. But listening to you, it seems so much more complicated with lasers and, you know, this measurement and that measurement. You know, it's, you know, so when you talk to, you know, I'm looking from an investment point of view, you know, we're always talking about what's the next investment, what's the new technology, you know, robotics, obviously, drone technology, what's coming up in the future. When you speak to, I mean, obviously, you've gone out and raised money, but when you talk to investors, how do they kind of, how do you approach them, number one, and how do you, you know, how do they take, you know, what is their response usually when you talk about these things?
Okay, we're actually right now raising a seed round of 3 million. So we're going out doing that. And very interesting in this environment, raising money. I'm sure you guys know a bit about that.
Yeah, we sure do.
And well, but I'm finding at this at the seed level, it's actually definitely not as bad as the later levels, okay? There's still a lot of people that are looking for really interesting ideas at the seed level. And the response has been, it's definitely been quite good. Now, some of the things, again, what we learned as we were pitching it, it's not just about, oh, great, your drone is faster than doing this. It was what Ralph said. There's a huge safety factor here. And they love the fact that we're dealing with the whole labor shortage that these companies are doing. You know, so there were three things that we got out of it. Don't just be like, hey, your drones, I can do this faster, better. It's like, no, it's safer. You're dealing with the labor shortage. And then the other part that really sort of appealed was just that the fact that anyone using this, like when a company uses this, it really changes the landscape of what they can bid on a project. And so when you start changing the industry, it's not like a small little change. It's like you're changing stuff enough that other people are going to have to follow. And that's been what's really helped us talk to these seed stage VCs.
So if I had to categorize two market segments, say commercial as just one segment and military as a different segment. Military is huge. Obviously, the sales cycle is much longer. Wouldn't you just go after the military? I think they have more money. They, you know, once you get in, it becomes easier from an application point of view. I mean, from, you know, how are you thinking from a company point of view as to your go-to-market strategy?
I think a lot of it for us, I mean, we started down the route of we wanted to make drones paint, and we saw there's a huge amount of science involved in it. It's like, I'm really bad at math, man. That was like, for me, I'm like, holy crap. And thankfully we have like really smart engineers on the back end that are doing this stuff. What we want to do is we're sort of taking the faster route to get to the market. The sooner we're to the market, and that's why the PowerWash drone was really the obvious one there. And, you know, we're dealing like with a lot of people with some chip shortage issues and waiting on those things. But that product is really right around the corner for us. And we wanted to get a product out on the market and selling. And that just changes the dynamic of the company. Now, the other projects, when you're doing things with the military, it's just longer term. There's some real benefits to that. But even one of the things, so first they discovered us through the videos that are online, through different things. They were looking for a solution. They're like, oh my God, these guys are doing it. They also have a mandate when possible to really try and use commercial technology because they find that it generally is cheaper. They can get it tweaked to what they want to do and their benefits to develop the business and to get the solution that they want. So I think it's beneficial to sort of be in that zone where it's like, yeah, we're working with the military, but we want to do commercial stuff as well. I mean, I don't think it's either or.
Okay, Phil, here's, you know, I've been giving you nice pitches. Here's a curveball. What's your TikTok policy? Can your engineers have TikTok on their phones?
Wow. Yeah, they probably can. Do they? I seriously doubt either of these guys are doing, you know, none of these guys are using TikTok, you know, it's like, so no, we don't regulate like that. Now, there are some things like when you say that, one of the things we had to do is their flight controllers, and DJI is like the big drone company out there. And we have some stuff running with their technology. But when you're dealing with Department of Defense or Department of Interior, you know, you really have to be running off of Pixhawk. You have to be running off of a different flight controller. So, you know, we're doing that, you know, it's, yeah. That's my TikTok.
How old is the company?
The company, so Bob originally had the idea in 2016. And the first 2 years were really spent doing that proof of concept. Is this thing going to work? And then when he realized it would, writing patents, because a lot of the stuff here, the intellectual property around it, we've walled off pretty well. And that was like one of the main, the first things we did. And then after that, he brought on some engineers. We started, you know, moving these things forward, working with some of our, you know, it's always a process of where you go through, you get that proof of concept, you move it to a prototype, you start doing field testing, you work with real customers. They tell you, guys, this would be really cool, but X, Y, and Z. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, so that's sort of been the process we've gone through over the years. And it's really helped us quite a bit.
And Phil, is there a limit, height limit to using your drone?
The height limit really will be around the weight. Okay. So the drone itself weighs somewhere like 25 pounds. And then when you're putting hose on and you have water in it and stuff like that, you're going to, you know, depending on the weight of the hose and things, like 160 feet. That's why what you were saying before, finding different ways to support the hose and do stuff like that. That's how you get these higher projects. So we've done stuff before where certain buildings will have like a deck up on the like fifth floor or something, and we're able to like mount put the things there, and then from there go on up and, you know, and then come on down from the roof, stuff like that.
You know, I was just going to say Marcus has a big TikTok personality, and he has a lot of TikTok following. Right, Marcus?
I'm trending sometimes.
How much?
One of my old tech buddies, he has like one post that he made for like, he has like 300,000 likes. I was like, that's crazy. Everything else is like two, but this one, I don't know why, but it trended like crazy, and he's shocked.
Marcus, you put some of this on TikTok as well, do you not?
I have. And then I have a cousin who like started helping me put some more up, and because it's very time consuming to edit everything. But can it do, is it able to do like complex painting? Like I wanted to know for Ralph, if you had to complete with Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapels, took him 5 years to do that thing, and that's a little room. You know, how long would it take your company to paint the whole thing? 5 minutes? Yeah. Or
we are not even close to that right now. I mean, what we're really doing is making painting for big flat surfaces right now. Okay.
Yeah.
And so if you think of a lot of the warehouses that they put up for like Amazon and stuff, being able to just polish those and paint them off and do it as quickly as possible, but really complex structures, that'll sort of be a next step for us.
Version 2.0.
Yeah, and then doing masterpieces. I mean, we're probably around version.
Marcus, if you're asking if ChatGPT is there, no, it's not.
That was literally my next question. I wanted you could ask ChatGPT.
I know where you were going with that.
Oh my God.
No, you know, but
I'm
some
all
of
about
what
building up the drama, you know, like you gotta go. God.
No, but some of what you're talking about, a lot of this, you know, there have been things where the goal would be to really be able to have a tablet where we have, you know, you're basically taking, you know, this is the structure and you can define different pieces, the colors, what you want where and all of this. And the drone would just be able to go up there and do it. You know, it's still science fiction, but it's not total fiction. This is science. It will be possible. And these things will
be. Phil, what about competitors? Do you have any competitors?
We have some competitors that are doing the power wash part, which is the easier part. There are a couple companies doing that. In painting, there's no one really doing it with drones. There are a couple companies that use crawlers and things like that that go up the side of buildings. Other companies that have robots that you mount inside of lifts. So you have like a truck that comes up and it has this thing in it. And rather than having a person painting, it has the robot in there doing it because the robot can't really move itself. So
that's probably, they have an advantage over you probably in smaller jobs.
They have an advantage because they're able to do it right now. You know, it's like, we're still programming to do it. What we're doing is a little more complicated, but on their stuff, you still have to get the lift, right? You still have to buy that, and then you have their robot inside. It's just that the robot is able to apply the paint and do it very accurately rather than a person who's doing it. Right. So there are definitely advantages to that over having people do it manually, but I think eventually drone technology will be more flexible and will better serve the interests.
Phil, on the power wash thing, you know, I was just thinking of all the skyscrapers, say like in Dubai, where there's a lot of dust and sand and everything. Have you guys kind of looked at that market? That's a huge market.
I had a call on that last Tuesday night. So yeah, we were talking about that. There's some challenges there. You know, one of the things that, you know, they don't like using a lot of water there. For obvious reasons. So,
right,
you know,
right,
they
right.
were, you know, are there other ways to clean, you know, different things like that. But yeah, we were talking about it. Also the size of the buildings, some of them are just so high that I think we'd have to, there the drone laws are much more lax than they are here. So we'd be able to make, you know, the Megatron of drones, something that could, you know, really lift up to higher things. We're not doing that here because you just have the FAA rules.
Difficult. Right.
What's behind that 55 pound rule? Yeah. What's behind that? Why not 100 pounds? Why not 150? What's with 55?
Depends how long the tud is if it falls.
I think the person who made the story I've heard, the person who made that law really was a Sammy Hagar fan and loved that song, I Can't Drive 55, and he just picked that number. I honestly don't know. You know, really everything starts out with safety. And I think drones, when they came, you know, there were no regulations. Then they tried to, how do we rein this in? And I think they were like 55 pounds. That's a big old drone, right? And so they're like, they're trying to think of how to keep people safe. We think, and I wouldn't be surprised to see this happening, that tethered drones, okay? Because we have a power tether, right? We have a hose. Our drones aren't going to like blast off and go anywhere where we.
And it's not like you have gasoline on board or propane or, you know, some bad chemical, right?
Right. Well, but if a 55, you know, if a drone falls out of the air that weighs 25 pounds and lands on you, it would not be healthy. Okay. And I think that's why they try to keep that weight down, because they don't want, you know, 300-pound things falling down and crashing through buildings. It's going to change over time. I would love to see more regulate, you know, I'd love to see separation of regulation around battery-operated drones, because even when they're using them for delivery and stuff like that, that's where, you know, they're doing things now. A lot of those will have little parachutes on them and things in case they run into trouble, that they'll come down gently and aren't going to be like crashing into cars and people and stuff like that. These bigger drones that we're using for industrial purposes like this, it really would be useful if they were regulated differently, because they're never beyond the, you know, you see them all the time and they can't go off in the wild.
I assume if you're painting a building, the area below is roped off, so there shouldn't be anybody there. But of course, you can never tell.
When we're operating these, that's part of what the pilot, they call it, the pilot in charge is responsible for making sure the area underneath the drone, that people don't go in there. So yeah, you separate off those areas, you do your work. You wouldn't be working and doing something while people are going in and out of a building underneath you.
Are the controls hardwired to the drone, or is it like a Bluetooth technology?
It's RC, radio control. And right. It's basically the way you fly the home drones that you have, the little controller things. It's all pretty easy. We have a few little, you know, a few extra buttons on there. And then on the spray painting drone or the ultrasonic thickness testing drone, we have sort of a tablet there where we have button, you know, do this, activate the paint, do this, you know, different pieces.
And Phil, are you going to come out with a video game to teach gamers how to use your equipment?
Mind blown. Never thought of that one.
You're going to come out with the movie Top Gun 3 Maverick Drones.
Painting the aircraft carrier.
That's it.
Which you guys are doing, though, by the way, right? That's,
well, no, you know, it
can be used. That's great application.
It's a great application. And what's interesting is one of the first things when we were doing this, one of our early, you know, we're in Jacksonville, we're near a lot of the Navy stuff. We ended up talking to a company that paints military aircraft. And when they were doing this, they put, I think they do like 6 coats of paint, you know, and those all have to be done at a very, very precise level. And they were the ones that got us into the dry film thickness testing, because they were like, after we paint a coat on this thing, we go back and we have to measure like 2,000. I can't remember what they said, a couple hundred of these things. And it could just take them like a week to do the measurements on it. And automated with the drone, we're able to do them much faster. And they're like, this would save us a huge amount of time. So those are sort of the things we're thinking.
Phil, what business are you in? Are you in development? Are you in manufacturing and sale? Or are you in to development, manufacturing, and then painting? How do you determine your business lines?
Well, we really see ourselves as a technology company that's really trying to solve problems. And so, you know, I don't think that it's not like, oh, we're in an industrial company or something like that. It's, you know, we look at each of the markets separately, and we definitely have a lot of industry experience. Like, we are working closely with people doing these things. But for us, we are a technology company.
Right. So you will sell your equipment to anyone.
That's correct. Our job, you know, we aren't going to be service providers. We're not the ones that are doing this. You know, the only times we do that are when we're doing these field testing where we're working with contractors and really hand in hand, sort of doing it for them and then basically getting their feedback. But no, the idea, we're selling these to these guys, we're training them in how to use it, and that's our business model.
Awesome, Phil. That's fantastic. Listen, love seeing what you guys are doing. We'd like to bring you back later on to see how you guys have evolved. Love to see what kind of funding is going on in this. We always are on the lookout for the right kind of investments, the cutting edge investments. And, you know, it seems like you are onto something.
Fantastic. Hey, thank you, guys. If you're ever in Jacksonville, we have the drones here. Stop by our place. We'd love to show you.
Ralph is close by. Where are you, Ralph?
No, I'm in Sarasota. Send one down to pick me up.
Ralph, there's a weight limit on those.
Yeah, you better send several. I'll be in the lawn chair like that guy with the balloons, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Thank you, Phil.
Ralph, great, up in the air. That's it. Guys, thanks so much for everything. Phil, thank you. We look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Okay. Pleasure, guys. Cheers.
You take care.
All right.
Episode 23 of The Exit Strategy. Like, share, and subscribe. We'll see you the next time.